The short story, The New Year's Eve Party. Maggie decided that we should have a New Year's Eve party to celebrate our first year in the corridor. Our families were convinced that we would meet a tragic end living there. So I suppose every day we managed to survive was a reason to celebrate. We let everyone in the Second Avenue terraces know that they were welcome. That was a gimme, of course, but we also wanted to invite our friends from the suburbs to attend. Those invitations in the past were usually ignored because most of our suburban friends refused to come to the corridor after dark. That was okay with me because I had become somewhat of a hermit. This was different, though, because Maggie wanted this party to be a success, and I didn't want to disappoint her. She decided to add two new acquaintances to our party list. There had been a memorial service in the park to honor Winston Adams, the son of Reverend Laurel Adams of the Methodist Church. Winston was killed by drug dealers when he attempted to stop them from selling drugs to kids in the neighborhood. And Winston was just another good person who attempted to make a difference only to become a casualty of the corridor itself. It was this memorial service that we met two unlikely corridor residents, Heather and Holly. Both were blonde and unusually beautiful. Holly was in her early 30s, and Heather was much younger, maybe 25. At first meeting, they seemed surprisingly more like the people we knew prior to the corridor. After introducing ourselves, Maggie was quick to invite them to our party. As I said, everyone in the terraces had been invited, but that's the way it was. You couldn't have a party without inviting everyone. Living in the terraces was akin to living at Fort Apache. Crime was so prevalent that we needed to bond together with others for protection. Maybe that's why this New Year's, our first, was so important. I think we were thankful for a safe first year there. The party, however, was not exclusively for corridor residents. We did invite at least one couple from the outside world, Ryan and Sarah Kelly. Actually, they were the only people besides family who would even think of coming into the corridor after dark. They were the first people we met when we moved to Farmington Hills, and they continued to encourage our friendship, even though they thought our move to the inner city was absolute lunacy. Ryan was obviously of Irish descent, but born in England and raised in California's Napa Valley. The Irish overpowered his English birth and his Northern California upbringing. However, his zest for life was anything but laid back. Sarah was dark and of Russian Jewish ancestry. She was a traveling salesperson whose beauty blew Ryan away. Sarah was no princess. In fact, she was a man's woman. But I was sure I would never really know her. But then, I really don't think Ryan would either. It's amazing how people will marry a vision or a wishful image and live with them for years only to discover that this person really never existed. They got to the party early. In fact, Maggie was still putting the finishing touches on her makeup when they arrived. I opened the door to a smiling Ryan Kelly. "I'm Ryan, and this is Honey. We're entertainment for the night. The Bear It All Dancers," Ryan announced in his deep 6'5" voice. "You wish," Sarah declared. "Is it okay if I just hire half the team?" I shot back. "Only if it's me," Ryan answered as he shook off the snow and entered. "Well, Doug's already seen me, and it didn't cost him anything," Sarah said in her husky, sexy voice. "See, that's our trouble. Sarah's always giving it away. How are we going to save enough money so we can move into the corridor, too?" Ryan loved to bust us for leaving the safe suburban Farmington Hills area. "Are we the first ones at the party?" Sarah inquired, as if she didn't want to know the answer. "Heaven forbid," Ryan blurted out. "Absolutely. But don't worry, I won't tell anyone," I assured her. "But there is a not often used law that says you cannot be the first one at the party, and you don't want to know the punishment." "It's probably an invitation to next year's party," Ryan said smugly. Morris Crispin, Zenas Brown, Larry Murphy, and ex-nun Virginia Lemansky were also invited to our party. Virginia was a wonderful guest because she would share never-before-heard stories about her life in a convent. I always believed that she had the makings of a bestseller. In fact, I already had a working title. They used to call me Sister. Another one was, I Got Out of the Habit. Virginia, however, was true to her order, and even though she decided to leave the habit behind, she wouldn't do anything that would hurt the church. Trust me, her stories would have done that and more, but she wasn't going to be the one that exposed them to the public. She chose to share them with only a few close friends and only after a few glasses of wine. Any party in the corridor was eclectic in the makeup of the guests who attended, and our New Year's Eve party was no different. When Heather and Holly arrived, it really became diverse. They drew a great deal of attention from our other guests, not only from the men, which was a given, but also from the wives, especially the wives. In fact, after an hour or so, one of the wives came to Maggie with the inevitable question, "Do you know what these women do for a living?" Maggie knew, but like everyone else in the corridor, someone's job or profession was never a major concern or a topic of conversation. At dinner parties, six-figure marketing executives would sit across the table from an $8,000-a-year roofer, and neither would talk about their jobs. There was always more important topics to discuss. In fact, during my 5 years in the corridor, I don't think I ever heard anyone say, "What do you do for a living?" Most people in the corridor could care less. Even Marlon Hamilton didn't care, but he did show interest in Heather and Holly and was very disappointed when they announced that they were leaving. "Why do you have to go so early?" Marlon was quick to ask as he eyed their ample cleavage. Holly started to answer but was interrupted by Heather, who said, "We have another party to go to." "Yeah, some people from work," added Holly. I think we were all sorry to see them go, but once they did, only Marlon wanted to speculate as to what kind of party they were leaving to attend. "Some people they work with, huh? I think they're available to work with just about anyone." "Well, Marlon, if anyone should know, it would be you," chipped in Virginia Lemansky. "Guilty as charged," Marlon quickly responded. Marlon wore his womanizer badge proudly. In fact, Virginia had become his most recent challenge. The party, like most corridor parties, was pretty mild. No open use of drugs, only alcohol. Lots of alcohol. Parties there, however, seemed more fun because corridor folks seemed to always be ready to celebrate anything, including the first snowfall, Fridays, or the arrival of a new neighbor. Our New Year's Eve party that night ended like most New Year's Eve parties, and that is with the ceremonial midnight kissing. It's a custom I've never really relished. Men kissing your wife, and you kissing unattractive women you'd rather not kiss. This was unique for us in that two of the people were gay men, Bill and Jerry, and they were a couple. Bill was an ex-truck driver turned male nurse, and Jerry was a psychologist. At midnight, everyone kissed their partners, including Bill and Jerry, and they turned to kiss everyone else. Ryan, all 6'5" of him, turned around after kissing his wife, Sarah, and was standing toe-to-toe with Bill, who promptly planted a kiss directly on Ryan's lips. I may have been the only person to actually see the kiss. Ryan just stood there with a startled look on his face as Bill turned to kiss someone else. Ryan then looked around to see if anyone had actually seen the kiss. Our eyes met, and the look on his face said it all. My first response was to pretend I didn't see it, but my smile confirmed it and couldn't hide the fact that I had witnessed it. Ryan was confident about his own sexual preference and just shrugged off the moment with a comment like, "I wasn't a consenting adult, honest." Someone else might have turned it into an ugly incident. Oddly enough, we had very few incidents at any of our corridor parties because everyone was in agreement that parties were for fun. We had lots of parties in the corridor, and they were always fun.